The following is the first part of a seminar entitled Ultimate Self-Realization, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Das Adhikari, recorded on June 7th, 2008, in New Gokula, Australia.
So I would like to personally thank each and every one of you for coming to this Ultimate Self-Realization Retreat. In the former times, in their former ages, the great sages would go on a retreat for their whole life. They would go to the Himalayas or go to the sacred forest, and they would go on a retreat for the whole life. They would never go back to the city, you see. They would just go to some hermitage, some holy place, and they would just stay there the rest of their life. But that may not be practical for all of you to just stay here now and forget everything else and just give the rest of your life to chanting and hearing. So we are going to give you some tools on this retreat how you can keep the mood of the retreat with you and go back into the city and do your normal activities but in a new enlightened state of consciousness. In other words, the science of Krishna consciousness is the most practical science. And the proof is Arjuna. He wanted to go on a retreat. He said, Krishna, I think I'd rather be on a retreat. He wanted a retreat from the battlefield, you see. But Krishna said, no, you have to. I'm going to train you in this half-hour seminar. I will give you a chariot seminar, you see. On the chariot, I will give you one seminar called Bhagavad Gita. And after hearing this, then you will be able to go back out and deal with the worldly affairs in such a way that you're no longer implicated in them, you see. So, we will do that in this retreat. Following the footsteps of Sri Krishna, we will give you the tools, the information, the guidance, and the inspiration that will empower you to remain transcendentally situated even while you deal with all that mundane stuff day in and day out in the material society. So before we dive into this sublime retreat, I would first like to offer to invoke auspiciousness by chanting the following sacred mantra. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Pada Kamala Shri Guru Vaishnavamsha Shri Rupa Sagrajata Sagana Raghunathan Vitam Tam Sajiva Sadaita Zavaduta Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Deva Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakonvitamscha. So, why do we call it ultimate self-realization? There are different levels of self-realization described in the Vedas. There is Brahman realization, Paramatma realization, and Bhagavan realization. Brahman realization means you deny the material world. You say, this world is false. I want nothing to do with it. I just want to merge into the spirit and forget all of this material anxiety. Just merge into the oneness. This is a very elementary level of spiritual realization. Such persons on this pathway, along with denying the world, they also deny the form of God. They say that actually God is the formless, impersonal oneness. They deny that He has a personality. They say that His form is an illusion. He doesn't really have a form. He just appears to have a form, but He doesn't really have one. Since they say the form of God, the form of Krishna, is Maya, therefore we use the term Mayavadis for them. Because they hold to the principle of Maya, that God's form is Maya. Therefore, they are Mayavadis. So the impersonalist Mayavadis, that is the first level of self-realization. The next level is the yogis, the ones who go to the mountain, the Himalayan caves, and do the ashtangas, who develop the yogic powers, you see. The ultimate aim of their yoga is to realize the four-armed form of Vishnu who resides within the heart of all living beings. That is their program. They want to realize that Param Atma, four-armed form of God. So that is one step higher. Those who are impersonalists on the first level, they can realize the eternity aspect of God. The Paramatma yogis, they can realize not only the eternity aspect of God, but they also realize the knowledge aspect of God. The third group, they are called devotees of Krishna, or of any Vishnu form, Narayan, Nrisimha, anyone who is worshipping the Vishnu Tattva category, of which Krishna is the original. They are called Vaishnava, devotees. The devotees, they go beyond the... Of course, they also realize that the material world is not the ultimate reality. They also realize the four-armed form of the Lord within the heart, Paramatma. But they go far beyond them. They find the original form of God situated in the spiritual sky, beyond this material existence, who is not only there, but He is also having all kinds of amazing adventures. And the devotees qualify themselves to enter into those amazing adventures of the Supreme Person in His transcendental kingdom. So their realization is the highest, therefore that is the ultimate self-realization, you see. Therefore I call my course the ultimate self-realization course. And I've noticed that all my lectures are introduced as ultimate self-realization 1, ultimate self-realization 2, etc. So those who've invited me, they're giving me my topic. I just do what I'm told. I'm just a worker here. Whatever I'm told to do, I do that. So I've been told to speak on the ultimate self-realization process. That is actually called Krishna consciousness, the ultimate self-realization system. As taught by my beloved spiritual master, whose murti is here. And actually, Prabhupada is present. It's not just a statue. Srila Prabhupada is personally present here. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Shimate Bhakti Vedanta Shamaniti Namane Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvisheshu Shunyavari Vushtacha Desha Taline. So, I am praying for his blessings that this short time that we are gathered together here at this holy place of pilgrimage, New Gokula, that everyone can become completely enthused and infused with Krishna Bhakti, the ultimate self-realization science. I'm praying for Prabhupada's mercy that all of you can become completely enthused, so much so that you have no business from now on except to serve Krishna. While you go back to your families and your jobs, you'll do it in a state of Krishna consciousness instead of just some, well, I have to make ends meet. You see, the beauty of this process is this. Ananyaschintayanto mam yejana parupasate tesham nityabhiyuktanam yogachemam vahamyaham. Krishna says that those who worship me with exclusive devotion, meditating on my transcendental form, for them, whatever they have, I protect it. And whatever they are lacking, I personally deliver to their front door. You see, Krishna gives everything to that person who totally absorbs himself in his service of Krishna. Everything material and spiritual, whatever you need to go on serving Krishna, along with your family members, to engage the whole family in serving Krishna. Whatever you need to do that, Krishna gives all of it to you. You don't have to be in anxiety about anything. Never. Because you know, because I've totally given myself to Krishna's service, now Krishna is taking personal care of me at every step. So, we want to teach you how to be in this mood, which is described in the Srimad Bhagavatam, ahaitakiya pratiyata, unmotivated, uninterrupted bhakti. We want to teach you how to be in this mood. Because in this mood, you become totally, completely satisfied. So what is our schedule now for this first session? So up until when should I speak? It's now 4 o'clock. What's my first assignment now? I'm going till 4:30, then a half-hour break and another seminar. Okay. And during the breaks, anybody who wants to have anybody who has a question, wants to have personal questions, can do that if I'm available. Sometimes I may not be available. I may be in a meeting or something. But if somebody wants to meet with me personally, please come with an actual question for guidance. If you just want a blessing, I'm blessing all of you right now. You're all blessed. But if you actually have questions and inquiries, then you're welcome to come for questions and inquiries. Because that is Shishi Radha Gokulananda Ki Jai. Shishi Gornitai Ki Jai. So, it actually is stated by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita that when you approach a spiritual master, you should inquire from him submissively and render service unto him. And in this way, the self-realized souls can impart knowledge unto you because they have seen the truth. So that's the system. You come with questions and offers of service also. This is how you become, how you get the full blessings of the spiritual master in Krishna. So, actually, in the Vedic culture, this science was taught from the very beginning. The little boy, at the age of 5, he would go to the Gurukula. The local village guru, he'll have a boarding school at his ashram, you see. And all the young boys, they live there for 20 years, can you imagine? At five, the boy goes until he's 25, he lives with a spiritual master, getting all training in the Vedic science. Even Krishna, he went for some time to the ashram of Sandipani Muni. And the Guru Mata also, Sandipani Muni's wife, also engaged Krishna in different types of services, like gathering firewood and things like that. So, at the very beginning, the young boy, 5 years old boy, he's getting the training. Of course, the parents were also training him in the home. But then at 5, now he's getting formal training for 20 years under the guidance of Guru. And then at the age of 25, he has the choice. Would you like to remain a brahmachari and be qualified to be a sannyasi? Or would you like to become married man? He would have free choice. The age is 25. If you like to take wife now, you can do. Or if you want to remain in ashram as brahmachari and become sannyasi, eventually you can do. Either way, you see. Either way. So the Vedic culture is very nice. It trains everyone, those who are attached and those who are detached. Everyone is given training how to become fixed on this pathway, back to home, back to Godhead. So the same principles we can apply even now. The same principles that were followed thousands of years ago in the Vedic culture. Those same principles can be followed now. We have to adjust a little bit for the modern socio-economic culture. But not that much, really. Not that much. We can still rise early, just like they formerly did. Before we go to work, we can get up early in the morning. We can chant, we can read, we can offer an arti, take some prasadam, and then go with our spiritual batteries completely charged, go to our job and do nicely, and come home and have another spiritual recharge in the evening. And so in this way, the life can become very, very happy and satisfying, following this path with the ultimate self-realization pathway of Krishna consciousness. It doesn't require a lot of money, it simply requires sincerity, you see. For other things, other entertainment, you have to pay big money. Some people spend thousands of dollars to get one of these home entertainment centers, you know, a huge screen, you know, like 15 by 20 foot screen, you know. I've seen one Indian doctor, he had a big home theater thing. Huge screen, so he can sit and watch videos, you know, larger-than-life videos from his couch. So if we have these kind of desires, you see, to have a 15 by 20 foot video screen in the den of our, you know, 20-room mansion, then we have to work very, very hard. And we have little time to think about the self-realization process. But if we're willing just to do whatever is necessary to live comfortably and keep our wife and kids comfortable, without going to any extravagant level, then the balance energy, the time and energy that we save, can be utilized for cultivating our Krishna consciousness. Just like now, you have come for this retreat, you see. Instead of thinking, how can I get some more? How can I use this vacation to earn some more money? You're thinking, how can I advance in Krishna consciousness? So, if we can find ways to utilize some time every day for Krishna consciousness, then we'll find that we can quickly advance along the pathway. So that when we actually leave our body at the time of death, we won't have to take breath again. This will be the last time. We have to go through this thing, taking a body, you know, growing up, having to go to school, having to get educated, having to find a way to maintain ourselves, so many anxieties, and the diseases come and calamities come, and it's a big problem in this material life. But if we can become very solidly fixed on the goal of achieving perfection, you see, going back to home, back to Godhead in this lifetime, then whatever problems we have now, they won't really faze us. I'll give you an example in this connection. Just imagine you're in some country, third world country, where a civil war breaks out. And everywhere people are they're having their heads cut off, women are being raped, houses are being burned. I mean, it's really all hell has broken loose. But the Australian military has flown in a big transport jet to rescue all the Australian citizens. You see, and for days you've been locked inside your house. You're running out of food. You're afraid for your life. But now the word has come. You know, the Australian Air Force has brought in a big transport cargo plane to get all the Australian citizens out. You see, They come by your house with a jeep. You know, a military jeep, you're in the jeep, you're going through it, there's hell all around you, you see. But now you're on your way home. You see, you're not back in Australia yet, safe back in Australia yet. There's still all kinds of terror happening all around you, but you know you're safe. You're getting ready to get on the plane, and you'll be taking off in a few minutes, and you're going to be out of there, you see. So devotee is, once someone takes solidly the path of Krishna bhakti, even though there's all hell breaking loose all around him in this material world, he has no anxiety. He knows, I'm out of here soon. I'm on my way out of here right now, in fact. And it doesn't matter really what may happen in this material world, because I'm out of here. I'm on my way out of here right now. So whether things are happening nicely or all kinds of hell breaks loose all around me, like, you know, terrorist attacks or whatever may be there, you see, it doesn't faze a devotee because he knows he's out of here. He's going back to home, back to Godhead. Therefore, he has no anxiety about anything. He knows that very soon he'll be back with Krishna in the transcendental world where there's no birth, no old age, no petroleum to worry, so sure it is to worry about. They don't use petroleum up there, you see, to run their vehicles. They don't have automobiles there to worry about getting petroleum. They don't have to worry about the prices of food because everything is there by Krishna's grace. The desire of trees can give you whatever eatable you want. If you want mango, the tree will give you mango. If you want apple, apple. You want pineapple, whatever you want, the desire tree will give you immediately. You see? As much quantity as you want. So, devotee has no anxieties because he knows he's going back to that place where all forms of misery and suffering are completely conspicuous by their absence. Therefore, he fully absorbs himself in the wonderful activity of chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. And telling everybody else about it so they can get relieved also. Telling their friends, telling their neighbors, telling their prime minister, telling everyone. Chant these names and you will become happy. Chant these names and you will become free. Chant these names and all of your anxieties will become simply history. So I can ask now if there's any questions.
You said the one who meditates on Paramatma will be realizing only certain Siddh feature of the Supreme God. Why is it so?
Like, the yogis don't go beyond them.
Still, they actually, because Paramatma is also the personal feature of Krishna, it's not impersonal.
But not his original pastime feature.
So he can't actually experience ananda, even if he actually gets that. He can't experience bliss, even if he actually meditates on Paramatma.
And Prabhupada explains that they only realize sat and shit, and they don't realize ananda. He clearly states that. They don't actually get transcendental bliss. The yogis don't actually get transcendental bliss. It's amazing after all the hard work they went through, huh, to achieve the samadhi of the yoga system, but they don't actually get transcendental bliss. It's amazing, isn't it? But they don't. Prabhupada said they don't get it, so they don't get it. So, therefore, it's not worth it. Yogi nam api sarvesham madgatena taratmana shudava majate yo mangasamayuktadam homataha. Of all the yogis, the one who always abides in me, thinking of me within himself, Krishna says, he is the most intimately united with me in yoga and is the highest of all. So, the intelligent person, why should go through all this, you know, yam, niyam, asana, pranayama, pratyahara, jhana, etc., samadhi, the Eightfold Pathway. Why not just chant Hare Krishna? It makes it so much easier, you know. You know the austerity these yogis do? Very heavy. Yes?
I couldn't find it that easy. I had to do that. Mm-hmm.
What is it?
She didn't find it that easy. She did that before. She's saying she did that very
she did. You did the Ashtanga system?
Yes, before.
Did you? Yes?
Yeah, before she said yes.
And?
Before.
What was the result?
Didn't work.
Yeah.
Actually,
go ahead.
I think it helped.
She said, I thought it helped.
It has benefits.
Yeah.
Definitely, we know, actually, Prabhupada glorifies the Hatha Yoga system. It's very good for the health. It can help you to concentrate. Those things are there. But to actually become self-realized by that process is not practical in this age. Valmiki Muni, he spent 60,000 years doing the yoga system to achieve perfection. So who can live that long in this age? 60,000 years. You see, these yogis, they're yogis who come down from Kumbh Mela, who are actually doing that yoga system in the Himalayas. They have a system where they merge the incoming breath into the outgoing breath. In other words, they stop breathing completely, to slow down their dying process. Because our life is measured in how many breaths we take. The more you breathe, you're allotted a certain amount of breaths, and that's how your life is actually calculated. So these yogis, they extend their life for hundreds and hundreds of years by stopping their breathing, so that they can gradually attain perfection through the yoga system. But a devotee doesn't have to worry about them. All he has to do is be Krishna conscious, train himself how to be Krishna conscious, and if he's Krishna conscious at the time of death, then he's guaranteed to achieve the transcendental position. Janma karma cha me javyam evam yo vati tatvataha taktva dehang punar janma naiti mam meti sarjanam. One who remembers the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, O Arjuna, take his birth again in this material world, but he attains to my eternal abode. So all we really have to do is train ourselves to always be Krishna conscious. Remember Krishna's appearance, remember his activities, remember his teachings, remember his name, his fame, his form, his forms, his qualities, his entourage, his paraphernalia, etc. If we can simply do this, then we can achieve far more than the yogis can achieve, even after many lifetimes.
So, I want to dedicate my son to Krishna now. Can I? I mean, it feels natural to me.
She says she wants to dedicate her son to Krishna now. And does that?
Yeah. Now you want to do Krishna yoga?
Yeah.
Bhakti?
Yeah, but I want to still do asana together.
She still wants to do asana.
Yeah, we don't mind if you want to do some asana. Actually, by sitting even without an asana, if one can just sit straight in the class, we see some devotees, they slouch in the class and then they fall asleep, you see. If you can sit straight like a yogi, you see, then it helps you to be alert and keep your mind fixed on the lecture. So it's very good. To sit straight, like, even if you don't do the lotus posture, if you can just sit straight in the lecture, you see, without slouching over, that sitting straight will help your power of concentration. It's a fact. So it's very good if you want to do some things like that, because it will help your power. You have to use it for Krishna. That's all. Any other questions? Yes.
What is the difference between Vishnu, Krishna, and Narayan? Because in the Bhagavad Gita I see that behind the Krishna it is Lord Vishnu's form. Is it different? Is it the same?
What is the difference between Vishnu, Krishna, and Narayan? Okay. There are two categories of entities. There is Jiva Tattva and Vishnu Tattva. You and I, we are in the category of Jiva Tattva. We are Jiva souls. There is another category called Vishnu Tattva, which is the Supreme Personality of Godhead in all his multifarious manifestations. Each one of them is a Vishnu or a Narayan, you see. Especially Vishnu. Each one of them is a Vishnu. So Krishna is also a Vishnu in the Vishnu category. Narayan is in the Vishnu category. Balaram is Vishnu category. Nishinga Bhagavan, Vishnu category. They are all Vishnu category. And the original Vishnu form is Krishna. The original form in the Vishnu category is Krishna, the two-armed flute player. This is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says, Aham sarvasya prabhavo matak sarvam pravartate. I am the source of all material and spiritual worlds. Everything emanates from me. It is also confirmed by Brahmaji. Ishvaraha paramaha krishnaha satchidananda vigraha anadir adir govinda sarva karana karanam. So Krishna confirms, Brahmaji confirms, actually all the great acharyas confirm that Krishna is the cause of all causes, the source of all existence. He's the source of all the other Vishnu forms. So we are called Vaishnavas. We Krishnites are also known as Vaishnavas because we are devotees of Vishnu. Vaishnava literally means devotee of Vishnu. So if Krishna and Vishnu were different, we wouldn't be called Vaishnavas. We'd just be Krishnites. We wouldn't say, no, I'm not a Vaishnava, I'm a Krishnite. But a Krishnite and a Vaishnava are exactly the same thing. There's no difference. Now, someone can be a Vaishnava without being a Krishnite. They can be a Ramite or a Nisringaite, you see, and be a Vaishnava. But anyone who's a Krishnite, a follower of Krishna, he is automatically Vaishnava. Because Krishna is the original form of Vishnu. Yes?
Maharaj, sometimes actually we say that in spiritual life we need to feel things from within, like we need to feel things from the heart rather than saying from the mind. And I just want to understand, like when we say that we need to listen to the voice of heart, how do we differentiate between these three voices? If it's heart, from the heart, from the mind, or from the gut feel, as casually we say that.
Well, the difference is between the big heart means love in this context. Sometimes Prabhupada uses the heart and the mind as synonyms of each other also. But in this context, the heart refers to love. Where you give your heart, that's where you're giving your love. It's not the physical heart. But where you give your love, that is called giving your heart. So the yogi, he puts his mind, mechanically fixes his mind on Vishnu within the heart, Paramatma, by the asana, the breathing exercises, etc., without putting his heart, his love, you see. So the devotee, his mind is also, but he's doing it with love, that's the difference. So, if you simply put your mind, but there's no love there, then that mind can easily be diverted somewhere else. Just like that yogi, Vishwamitra Muni, he became so powerful yogi, but that Indra got very scared. This yogi may take away my kingdom. He's so powerful, he may forcefully become the king of heaven and drive me away from my post. Indra Dev became very worried. So he sent one heavenly society girl, Menaka, to allure the yogi, and immediately, as soon as he heard those ankle bells, he said, oh, a woman has come. And then he gave up his yoga practice immediately, you see. So, it is not a very good system simply to put one's mind only without giving one's heart also. It's not a very sure path. It's fraught with danger. But if your heart is totally dedicated to Krishna, your mind will easily be always absorbed in Krishna. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it has. But still want to understand, like, sometimes we have voices from within. How to differentiate, how do you filter that thing? Is it from the mind or from the heart?
Sometimes he gets voices from within, and he's wondering, how do I differentiate from...
Oh, for that you require a spiritual master. Because there is the super soul in your heart is guiding, and your mind is also telling you something. So you have to have a spiritual master. Whatever you feel is your heart, a divine inspiration within, you have to confirm that with your spiritual master. Is this what Krishna wants me to do? See, the spiritual master knows what is the best thing for your Krishna consciousness. You don't, always. So you have to concur if you're not sure. That there is inner voice, but we have two inner voices. We have the divine and the demoniac natures within. So guru is required to help you distinguish between the divine and the demoniac natures within, so you can always act divinely. Questions more? Yeah.
In second chapter, Krishna says that the soul cannot be cut into pieces. Whereas elsewhere in Bhagavad Gita, he says like each and every individual, so they are part and parcel of me. These two statements sounds a bit contradictory for me.
Why?
Because in one instance he says the soul cannot be cut into pieces. Okay, that's fine.
Each individual soul is indivisible.
Yes. So, but elsewhere he says that each individual soul, they are part and parcel of me. That means at one point or the other, we should have been part of Krishna.
We're always part of Krishna at every minute.
Yes. Then that actually contradicts the statement that we cannot be actually be divided.
No, you think it in a contradiction. We are never separated from Krishna ever. We just think we are. That's all. Are you separated from Krishna? You're sitting on Krishna right now. This is his energy. He's within every atom, between every atom. How are you going to ever be separated from Krishna? Just you're thinking you're separate from Krishna. Actually, you're never separated from Krishna, not even for a second. It's impossible. Because everything is his. He's manifested everything. It's all his energy. Everything is Krishna. You see, in that sense. Not in the Mayavadi sense, but he and his energy are non-different. So you can never be separated from Krishna, actually. You're just thinking separate. Is that clear? Or are you still confused? Clear? Okay, very good. You all can come closer. These men, you three men, you all come. We got spots right here waiting for you.
Yes. Why in the mantra they say Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare. Why not the, instead of Ram's name, Narayan's name comes in?
Hare Narayan, Hare Narayan, Narayan Narayan, Hare Hare.
Yeah, I mean there are so many Vishnu Tattva there. We also say that Narayan is a very higher form.
Mm-hmm.
Why the Narayan name doesn't come, mm-hmm. or the Vishnu name doesn't come?
Yeah. We are, there is also benefit, of course, chanting the holy name of Narayan. Om Namo Narayan. There are different mantras, and they are all potent, they are all powerful. This particular mantra is coming down, it actually is coming from Krishna. Golokera Prema Dana Hari Nama Sankirtana. This name is coming from the spiritual world. It is given in the Kali Santarana Upanishad. That of all the mantras for elevating the consciousness, there is no mantra for this Kali Yuga more potent than Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. We could ask the great sages why Hare Krishna, maybe they would tell us, but we know it is the most potent because it's confirmed in Kali Santarana Upanishad. Plus, it is also confirmed by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, who propagated it like anything all over India, and by Prabhupada, who spread it all over the world. So we may not know why the mantra is constructed the way it is. We may not know that one at the present time. But we do know that it is the most powerful mantra that's available. Now, if you want to know these detailed questions, I'll tell you exactly what Prabhupada told me. How to get the answers. Would you like to know?
Yeah.
Prabhupada personally told me how to get the answers to all these kinds of questions. He said, simply worship Krishna with full sincerity of attitude 24 hours a day, and then Krishna will personally come to you and answer all of your questions. So if you want these little nitty-bitty details, then you can get that. You have to become a pure devotee, completely pure. And then Krishna will reveal to you even the most insignificant little details you may want to know about. He'll tell you everything. But you have to be 24 hours a day engaged in pure bhakti with full sincerity of attitude. And then you will understand everything. Next question. So everyone's completely satisfied now? Yeah? How to meditate on the lotus feet of Krishna?
You say that you should always remember the lotus feet of Krishna.
Samashrutaye palava plava pavang padat mahatmarizat samashvataye palava plava plavang. Mahatpadang punya jasho marare bhavam vadir vatsa parang param padam 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 yad vibhutam natesham. For one who takes shelter of the boat of the lotus feet of the Lord, who is famous for wiping out that rascal demon Mura, and who is the shelter of the causing manifestation, this vast, insurmountable material ocean becomes reduced down to the amount of water within a hoofprint of a calf. His aim is the ultimate destination, Param Padam, you see, not that place where there is danger at every step. So if you will remember that the lotus feet of Krishna are the most amazing cruise ship that's ever been built in the history, more amazing than any cruise ship. Formerly, the Titanic was considered the most amazing cruise ship. But even on its maiden voyage, it was finished by one iceberg, you see. But these lotus feet of Krishna, they will never be finished. They will never be finished. So if you will understand these feet of Krishna, they are a boat. And if you will take shelter of that boat, of Krishna's lotus feet, by chanting his holy names, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. You see, the holy name is the ticket to get on the boat of the lotus feet of the Lord. You can't go on a cruise ship without a ticket. They don't give free passage. Of course, Prabhupada got free passage, but he, on the Javadutta. But normally, you have to get a ticket to get passage on the cruise ship, you see. So our ticket is Hare Krishna mantra. So if you will chant Hare Krishna with love and devotion, then Krishna will give you a ticket and you can get on that ship of the lotus feet of the Lord and you will achieve the Parampadam, the supreme destination, and you will completely cross beyond this world which is full of dangers at every step. So now we're officially supposed to have a half hour break now. So is there anything they're supposed to do with a half hour? Just mill around and do nothing? Or what, is there some scheduled activity?
It's pretty much Maharaj, it's pretty much free time, but
since we started so late, does anybody need free time now? I was thinking Vishnupriya Maharaj, you could lead a nice kirtan. Take a little break. Huh?
She's saying half an hour break.
We need a half hour break. Maybe I need one for my voice. Is the next program, is it 5? Well, let's look over the schedule so everybody's oriented, you know. Since we had to shift everything around. Let's kind of orient exactly what we're doing the rest of the day so we all are on the same track now. So according to this, we have the ultimate self-realization 2 from 5 till 6:30, 1700 to 1830, then prasadam, and then a special kirtan night. Who is Ananta Shesha Prabhu?
He's a devotee.
Oh, he's here. So he's going to do a kirtan night. Okay. So... any announcements? You have a question?
Yes.
All right.
Just a question about humility. Like, we expect it to be humble, and that's a quality, isn't it? Like, to be humble and humility is the greatest quality. But unfortunately, in the material world, humility can be mistaken as your weakness at times.
Right.
How do you distinguish that?
Right, I know. I know what you're talking about, because after spending 14 years as a brahmachari, when I got married, the temple authority said, now you need to get a job and be an ideal householder. So I took some training in computer programming, and then I went to one company called EDS, which is famous for being a place of workaholics. Ross Perot, you've heard of him? In EDS. Big computer consulting company. I went there and I had to put together a resume, you know. I put Bhaktivedanta Book Trust, you know. And as soon as the hiring authority, as soon as he said Bhaktivedanta, that's something from India, he said, he was thinking nonviolent and Gandhi. He said, you're not suitable to work at this place. But actually, that's illegal. I was discriminating against some, you know, again, because of my religion. I could have taken him to court on that, but I decided not to work there anyway. But that's the idea, that if you're humble, you're not aggressive enough. You really, you know, we don't really want humble people to work at this company. We want sharks, you know, who are willing to get out there and fight and devour everything they can. And, you know, that's kind of the mood in the material world. But you know what? Is there anybody more humble than Hanuman, before Lord Ram? Can you tell me someone who's more humble than Hanuman? What did he do when he went to Lanka? After he found Sita and they lit his tail on fire, did he humbly say, oh, my tail is on fire, I'm just going to let it burn and humbly take it? No, he lit the whole city on fire. He burned up the city of Lanka. That was his humility. So, and Arjuna also, is there anyone more humble before Krishna than Arjuna? But he got on that battlefield and he wiped out all the enemy soldiers, fighting as a powerful Kshatriya. So, the idea you have of humility is an idea coming from the Mayavadis. It's not the Vaishnava conception of humility. Prabhupada said, I act like a king because nobody can defeat me. And no one was more humble than Prabhupada. So our humility is not to become impotent wimps. Our humility is to act powerfully as spiritual revolutionaries on the order of Lord Chaitanya and Srila Prabhupada and our spiritual masters. That is our humility, to make a revolution on this planet in service to the great acharyas. That is our humility. We are humble before our acharyas, and before the non-devotees, we are warriors. You understand? We are warriors before the non-devotee class. We are warriors. We are trying to bring down their civilization and bring in a Vedic culture. We are very humble before our guru, but before the non-devotees, we are like warriors. Take this book. Take it. We try to, you know, chant Hare Krishna. Take this prasadam. We go out and sing and dance to revolutionize their consciousness. We go out in their streets and sing and dance just to completely transform their consciousness. You see? So we are humble before our guru and before Prabhupada. But before the material civilization, we are at war. State of war. That is our humility. It's not that whatever you say is okay and I'm just going to, you know, if you want to beat me, you can. No, we're not like non-violent, we're not like the Gandhian movement. You can whip me and beat me and, you know, shoot me and I'm just going to sit here and remain non-violent. No, we are fighting to establish Vaishnava culture. Does that answer your question? Okay. So we take a little break now. And we thank you very much. The next session begins right here in 25 minutes. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.